Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Welcome to another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, recording live in Manhattan, Kansas. That is me, Eddie Greer III. We're all about the latest in K-State sports and obviously what's going on in the community. It's been that type of day, folks, at least here on the recording on this Saturday. And I just forgot the date here. This is June 13th, 2020. Had to get that out of the way, folks. Again, K-State sports about to resume or is in the process of being resumed as well. We'll touch on that and continue our recent conversation of men's basketball. Just a jam-packed show once again. Here, again, my co-host calling from, of course, San Diego, California, none other than Alex Aiden. Alex, what is going on? Oh, Alex, my bad. Hang on, Alex. Okay, I got you. So, we're going to have to do that again. Sorry, it's been a little bit busy afternoon from yours truly. So, all right. So, you said something about your car. Again, Alex calling, my co-host from San Diego, California. And does first, before you get to that, do I sound a little different?
Are you supposed to sound different, Eddie? Is there something I'm supposed to listen to?
I don't know. I moved different locations to the inside of my basement here at the EG3 household. So to more disclosed location. So
hey, you sound good to me, Eddie. Okay, that's all that matters.
That's good enough. I can take that. All right, Alex. Got you on the line now, and you talked about your car. So give us the update. Give us the throwdown.
So first off, great to be back on. Great to have another week to talk K-State sports. But yes, two updates, Eddie. Two things I wanted to say. The first was on the car, because it was to be determined last time we were on the show. Well, not that anybody cares about my car, but I may as well finish the story. Finish the story anyway. The car is good and working, and everything's good there. Here was what happened, okay? Ready?
Okay.
When I got a new battery, the AutoZone actually sold me the wrong battery. So when I hooked up, no, technically they sold me the right battery, but they gave me the wrong battery. So we went to install it, my brother, my dad, and I, and we did. But when we installed the wrong battery, what it did was it blew a bunch of fuses in the car. Then that led to the next issue that I had that was discovered at the Kia dealership. I have a Kia Optima. And the dealer was like, boy, Alex, you were lucky. You were lucky. That could have just fried everything in your car. We could have had to spend over $1,200 fixing this thing. But you got lucky. It was just a few fuses that blew. They're fixed. Car's good to go. And I will say this, Eddie. We realized it was the wrong battery, and we took it and we took it back in and we got the right battery and hooked that one up. And so all was good, but then what wasn't working is my shift lock release wasn't working on my car. So you couldn't shift from park to reverse, you know? And that was that was part of the problem. So I was able to pop the top off and use a screwdriver to push down to actually shift my car from park to reverse and then reverse to drive until it was fixed, which was that following Monday. And then the radio wasn't working. So those are the two biggest fuses that blew. But the car's good. So that was the first thing. Had to give an update on that. The second thing is I just had to say congratulations to you for for finalizing your adoption with Emma. That was awesome to see. And I really, her comments, were so insightful post-adoption. She, oh my gosh, I don't know. I think I said it to you. I said, man, she applying to be on the show, apparently. That's her application. But congrats to you and the family on that. That was awesome to see, and I know that you guys are obviously really excited about that. And Emma is officially a Greer.
That's right, she is. Thank you, Alex, for those good comments. Yeah, she had a lot to say when we got home. I just had to get some of that really good post commentary there.
Conference.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah, all is good right now with us, and glad to hear that you avoided catastrophe with your car. So that's, and you saved up some money there too, so
crisis averted.
Yeah, crisis averted indeed. Purple Project Podcast is off and running here on this episode. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, couple of K-State alums, / Wildcat 91.9 alums as well, the radio station, the student radio station at K-State University. And while all that has gone on, Gators. I don't know if you heard this or not, but alligators are on the loose.
I have heard it.
Yeah, they're on the loose and still on the loose in Manhattan. And if
ask you real quick, what would you do if you came across one of these alligators that are on the loose?
I'll just keep run away from it and keep running.
What they said, I saw on Twitter the Riley County Police Department putting it out, saying, okay, here's what you want to do. And they jokingly said run. They're like, run. And they're like, no, really what you want to do. And so if anybody's listening in Manhattan and missed this, here's your PSA on it. And what you want to do is you want to remember, one, it's probably more scared of you than you are of it. Although I don't know, that would be true for me. But two, they said, try to keep eyes on it. Call 911 and then try to keep eyes on it until they get there so you can still see it when they get there. So they can go in and be able to get it. So if anybody sees it, if you want to run, run. But the preferred method is they want you to try to just keep your distance and treat it like any other wildlife that you would see in Kansas, and call them and keep eyes on it until they get there, and then they will take it in. But I'm with you, Eddie. I might just take off. I may just call and be like, look, I'm not hanging around for this party. It's out there. You good luck going and trying to find it, because I'm out.
Yeah. One of my coworkers yesterday said, he suggested a little bounty for both these gators, but came up with the reason why they haven't done that yet, because, they didn't want if there was a bounty, all these people would go after it, and the gator will just continue to slip away from everybody's grasp right now. So a little apple right now. And if 2020 wasn't weirder enough with what has happened, now you throw in stealing alligators. Someone stole an alligator and apparently just didn't want to put it back in the Wildcat Creek or something.
Weren't two stolen? If I recall correctly, because was it Tunnel Creek? Was that where they spotted the one? No, Wildcat Creek? Where was it where they spotted the one? They spotted, they had multiple sightings of one of them.
I think one of them happened at Lanier. I thought one of them said Lanier Trail, but I'm
Yes, that was one.
Yep. One of them for sure was Lanier Chair because
they shut the trail down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even on Count Manhattan, on alligators.
Oh boy, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so still, as of last night and today, the latest, until I watch the news later on tonight, alligators are still on loose here in Manhattan, Kansas.
Weird year. You're right, Eddie. It is one weird year. Man alive.
Yeah, that is for sure. So, all right, so from switching from alligators to what has happened, and I'm going to touch nice on... Transition. Go ahead.
I said nice transition. I like that.
From alligators to cowboys in Oklahoma State, we're going to touch on this just for a few minutes before we continue the conversation. Well, actually, I have a couple of things for getting into basketball, but Oklahoma State, the basketball team... Men's basketball got hit with huge penalties, and this has been a huge topic over the last week and a half or so, and we talked about a little bit on this podcast last week about Oklahoma State, and they had a lot more talent on that program, and still do, but the record doesn't show it. I mean, they've been inconsistent, and now, unfortunately, head coach Mike Boynton was not very happy, and apparently he was given a heads up before the breaking news hit, and yep, with all that's happened with that program here, Oklahoma State has been banned for 2020 to the 21 postseason, that's next year, if there is basketball season, placed on probation for at least 3 years, and they lose 3 scholarships for the next 3 seasons. That's too many threes altogether, with EG3. Not correlated, but along with several other recruiting penalties. This is back on Friday. The NCAA's Division I Committee infractions announced back on Friday. The ruling concludes with an continued investigation that ruled under former Cowboys associate coach Lamont Evans. This is back in 2016 and 17, and this is now we're in year 2020. Just too many numbers just flying around.
Wishing we were in 2021.
Yeah, a lot of people wish we're in 2021 right now, but. Going back a few years ago, with all this stuff, and obviously KU having their issues, now you throw this in the mix. Oklahoma State, you know, Mike Boynton trying to get some recruits over there. Still, Stillwater, he's done a nice job over there, despite the record. But another huge hit for that basketball program.
It is, and. Piggybacking off of my boy, I just want to read quickly what he had to say on that, because you're right. He was not happy at all with what was said. And he said, which is picked up by CBS Sports, he said, "I sit here extremely frustrated, really disappointed for this program, but most importantly, for the players in our program, many of which weren't even a part of the program when this began and have absolutely very minimal knowledge of anything that ever happened in this case. I feel badly for them, and I certainly hope that though the appeal process, we can understand more how terribly impactful this can be to their careers and their futures." And he actually went on and added a postseason ban for a bunch of kids that were 15 and 16 when a lot of this was going on is completely, completely out of bounds. So, not happy about the decision, and Eddie, you know, this is the first program to really get a big punishment post this FBI probe. The FBI did that probe a couple years ago. A lot of schools were kind of brought to light, brought to the surface. In that, I think that a lot of us remember Arizona and what happened with their head coach and. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Ayton, that was prevalent in the news, that came from it. But this was the first, Oklahoma State was the first school that got discipline from the NCAA from that pro. And so, does this shine a light on some future punishments from it? That's a good question. I'm sure that some people about 40-some miles down the road from you are wondering, because they're right in the thick of that right now, too. but with Oklahoma State, it's interesting, because I see what Boynton's saying. He's, you know, these kids who are now on the team now, they didn't have anything to do with it, and he is correct in that sense. With that said, you also have to be held responsible for, you know, those mistakes. I think that there's way too much cheating that goes on in collegiate athletics, and I believe that the hammer does have to be laid down to make a point that this is not acceptable. I don't know if I agree with the postseason ban, because to me it does feel like you're punishing these players, and these players didn't have anything to do with that. And so it doesn't, I don't know if that feels like the right punishment. I think that scholarships being taken away makes sense. That's not affecting the players as much as it is the program. And I think the program is more where that punishment should be aimed at. And I think that obviously stripping wins and championships and things like that of the years that you were cheating is where you want to start when it comes to punishment. But I mean, I get Oklahoma State's frustration with it. I know that the university, they released a statement pretty much where, and I won't read the entire statement, but I know that they pretty much, to sum it up, said they were just taken away. They did not expect at all the punishment that they got. And, you know, it's interesting because you sit here and we all know that the NCAA, we can call it what it is. We know the system's flawed when it comes to a lot of this. And so it's hard to take them seriously sometimes when they issue out punishments. But at the same time, you want schools to be held accountable. So it's really this weird, you almost don't know where to sit on the issue. But I do know that I kind of flip it and say, okay, what if this happened to K-State? What if, let's just take an example, Frank Martin. Something came out, Frank Martin, one of his assistants, something happened back in, you know, 2015. And then K-State gets this good recruiting class that we'll talk about later, and they make a run, but they can't play in the postseason because of what happened with Frank Martin's crew. You know, that wouldn't seem fair. And so putting it kind of in that perspective, for me, makes me feel like that punishment was not fair. But look, I mean, clearly there was some illegal stuff going on, and they need to be held accountable for it. And so I think that wins being vacated and scholarships being vacated and being not put on probation through 2023, I mean, I think all of that is completely justified. I just think that the suspension into the punishment for the postseason of next year is a little much. I will say they are appealing it, so who knows? Yep. Maybe they win the appeal, and maybe they do get to play in the postseason next year. But what I tell you, I think another reason why Oklahoma State's so upset about this is they had a great recruiting class coming in this year for their college basketball team, and they were expecting to do some big things. And they're expecting to be a big year. And they've got some players that could be one and done's or be leaving early that are in that recruiting class. So they may see that narrow window, and they may have seen it just shut on them. And they're like, oh, my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. We've got this one of the best recruiting classes in the country with players that may be leaving early, and now they can't play in the postseason. So what, do guys start transferring out? I know that one of those recruits was considering K-State. It came between K-State and Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. He ended up at Oklahoma State, you know, and that was a whole saga because he initially was going to K-State. He backed out at the last second, ended up going to Oklahoma State. That's a whole different discussion. But what happens with those recruits? Do they turn around and go somewhere else? Do they wait and hang around? I'm going to be really interested to see what happens with that. I don't know how many players have signed, so some of them might be stuck, essentially, there. But I think that was part of the reason Oklahoma State was so frustrated But it's because they, as you said, they've been inconsistent the last couple of years. And Mike Boynton, you know, he, let's be honest, you know, his first couple of years haven't gone quite the way he wants them to go. So you could kind of say it's maybe a make-or-break year for him. And what a blow on your make-or-break year. You finally get the recruits that you want, and you get the big recruiting class, you get everything, and it seems like everything's starting to fall in line, and then you get a postseason ban for something that a coach before you did. I'd be pretty mad, too, if I was Mike Boynton. Not going to lie. So, I mean, I guess we continue to wait and see what happens, but it's a complicated issue. I feel like I've been saying that a lot in our interviews. Man, this is a complicated issue. But this really is. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. What schools are going to get punished now? Punished in the future. And so, you know, will they win the appeal? What will recruits do? What will happen with Mike Boynton? I guess we just wait and see. But it was a bombshell that was dropped this week, no doubt about it.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, Alex, what goes on with that situation. But yeah, you hit on, just to sum it up here, two things. Yeah, the postseason ban, yeah. That has to suck for them if it were to be upheld by the NCAA. Why? Because, I mean, I haven't looked at the roster yet for OSU yet, but if they do have seniors, that sucks for them.
Yeah.
Because you only get to play the regular season, but be banned for the postseason, that has to be devastating for them. And then the other part I want to hit on, and you kind of took the words out of my mouth here, but this is going to be a whole different discussion probably for another podcast, is the whole saga with Donovan Williams and him backing out of K-State and choosing Oklahoma State. That's going to be, I could talk about that for a good 20 to 30 minutes on that situation. Oh. But
oh my gosh, yes. That was, you're right, we won't go into all the details now, but that was quite the little reality show that we got to deal with for a little bit.
Yeah,
K-State got kind of taken, ring around the rosy on that, got taken for a ride there, and then ended up at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, and unfortunately, K-State was right in the middle of all that, so we had to be involved in all that, but still, though, the recruit class that we'll go over here throughout this show here on the Purple Project Podcast here on episode number 5, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. But yeah, Oklahoma State, we will continue to monitor the situation and see if anything does change. We will then talk about it, because also, obviously, we know KU, we won't dive into all that now. But this is going back real quick before we talk about the freshman class from last year to the sophomore class, and I had it on a sheet here and I totally lost it, but yeah, so there we go. So yeah, them, KU, LSU, Southern Cal, North Carolina State, Auburn, Arizona, and Louisville, and you mentioned cheating. Yeah, I mean, college athletics, I mean, you're supposed to enjoy the privilege to be a college athlete and to enjoy the experience, you know, the game days, maybe not so much the practices, but the game days, the fans, and all of that. While all these universities, you know, trying to do stuff that isn't pleasing to NCAA. So that bothers me a little bit. Well,
Eddie, real quick, when I saw the bombshell dropped, I initially thought it was for KU. Because we've been waiting to see the punishment that KU's going to get, because we know that they're going to be punished.
And still waiting.
They're facing, I forget how many NCAA violations they're facing, but it's a lot. And I figured that they would. I know Oklahoma State was mentioned in the FBI, in the FBI probe, but I just didn't really think about Lamont Evans and his, what all he did at Oklahoma State, which was a, you know, looked more into it. I was like, yeah, you know, that does make sense. But I just didn't think much about that, because KU's been, honestly, probably the most discussed of all those schools, because they've been right in the middle of it. And, you know, there's really no denying that KU, you know, cheated. So I just figured that it would be them. And I thought that they might be the first school that they would come down on, too.
Yeah, I thought it was KU.
It was Oklahoma State as the first one. But yeah, I initially thought it was KU that mm-hmm. got it, and I was like, whoa, and I saw it was Oklahoma State. But then I was like, whoa, Oklahoma State. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yep, that is for sure. Now, late folks, talking about some wild. This podcast is about Wildcat Nation. We'll transfer into that right now. All right, so continuing our conversation from last week. Freshman class, we talked a lot about Bruce Weber and the disappointment. I'm trying to still find the right word, whether it's disappointment or not, but the lowly basketball season that we all experienced from last year. And the talent, we'll get into that in a second. But, all right, Dejuan Gordon, Martavis Murphy, and Antonio Gordon both had their highlights and lowlifes. Low lights of the season. So, and we're going to give this freshman class a grade. So, obviously, they're going to be sophomores this coming year. And we talked about what we want to see more from Dejuan, Antonio Gordon, Martavis Murphy, obviously. But going back to last year real quick, Alex, before I give my grade, because I already have it on my sheet. So, what grade would you give this this recruiting class, this 19/20 recruiting class for the first year, Dejuan, Antonio Gordon, and Martavis Murphy?
Yeah, and just to make sure I'm giving the proper grade, this would be essentially a grade 1 year in, correct, on essentially what I think of them after their freshman year.
Yeah, after their freshman year, going into the continued offseason right now, what grade would you give them? Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. I just want to make sure I was answering that properly. I would give them a B. I think I'd give them a flat B right now, and I think that the reason would be because of some of the things that you touched on. There were highs and there were lows, and so last year didn't give me any reason to think that those freshmen are duds, and that they're just not going to do anything at K-State and not going to work out. On the flip side, they didn't give me any inclination that they're going to be, you know, some Jacob Pullman or Rodney Magruder or anything like that. You know, right now, they showed some highs, they showed some lows, and I think we just need to continue to wait and see how they develop that second year. I mentioned it last week's show. I still think that Dejuan Gordon has the potential to be a star for K-State. He was too inconsistent last year, and he has to take that next step. And I think for K-State to do the things that they want to do, he has to be an integral part of it. He, I believe, needs to take on a leadership role, because we touched on last week also how young this team's going to be. And we do expect Mike McGurl, obviously, to be a leader of the team, but an underclassman is going to need to step up and be a leader because his team's so young, and they need to develop one. And I think Dejuan Gordon is the prime candidate for that. So I think he's capable of doing all that, and he showed flashes of it. But he needs to be more consistent. He needs to really grow into that leadership role, in my opinion. And it's going to be interesting to see if he can do those things, and I think he can. But we just have to wait and see. So, you know, I guess the jury's still out on that one. And I think the same thing is true for Antonio Gordon and Montavious Murphy, because Antonio Gordon, I like his physicality. I like his aggressiveness. I like that he doesn't shy away from some of that, like I felt McCall Maween did at times. But he was still way too inconsistent down low, and sometimes he let his emotions get the best of himself. Now, young players are going to do that, and that's just part of that maturation process, and he's only a freshman. So we need to see if he can become more consistent underneath the basket, and we need to also see if he can keep his composure a little bit better. Because if he can keep his composure, if he can stay out of foul trouble, so I'm getting to foul trouble too much too. If he can stay out of foul trouble, if he can just play smarter, I think that's going to help him a lot. And I feel like he can be a nice piece for K-State. I don't think he has the ceiling that Dejuan has, but I think that he can play a real nice role in there. And let's be honest, Levi's not leaving. They're going to be the only thing they can get down low. And then the Fontavius Murphy, I actually think he has a higher ceiling than Antonio Gordon. But injuries are, I think, the biggest question because he fought them all year as freshman year. So can he come out and prove that he can be healthy? He can have a fully healthy season. And if he can do that, I think K-State's really got something there. Because when he was on the floor, he was making plays. And he was doing nice things. He was getting rebounds. He was making the right read. He was making the right pass. I really liked what I saw from him. We just weren't able to see that much of it. And so, fingers crossed that he can stay healthy there. But the jury is really still out on all three. So I think we'll get a better gauge for them and whether this recruiting class was a success or a failure after we see this sophomore campaign for them. But I'll give them a solid B because none of them came in and were just like, oh, man, that player stinks. Like, what the heck? Like, none of them came in and were, no offense at all to James Love or Nigel Shad. I know that we mentioned them last week. No offense to those guys. But, you know, those three didn't come in and have that type of deal where they were just riding the bench all year or something like that. I mean, they were out on the court and they were making plays and they did have their flashy moments. And I said it last week, I'll say it again, I'm sure I'll say it on future shows, freshmen are going to play like freshmen. They're going to make mistakes. And they're going to go through ups and downs. And this is obviously assuming you're not a five-star blue chip freshman that goes to Kentucky or KU. You know, the average freshman coming into college is going to go through the growing pains of your first year playing college basketball. And that's to be expected because, you know, you're playing on a different level. You know, you're playing with a whole different group of guys. You're playing with faster players, stronger players, more athletic players, better shooters, playing more games than you've ever played. I mean, it's a huge adjustment. So I'm not going to hold that against them. You know, let's see what they do sophomore year. But I'll give them a solid B right now.
And you touched on some good points there. I've given them a C+. That might sound a little harsher, but
that's fair.
C+, yeah. I mean, Dejuan Gordon, you hope to see more from him in his sophomore year here in this upcoming season. Hopefully, in quotation marks. He and Martavius Murphy played a lot of minutes when Martavius was healthy. Average almost 25 minutes a game there. You want to see Antonio Gordon play more. Obviously, you know, he was suspended, obviously, for a couple of games with a whole KU fiasco there in Lawrence. But, yeah, I've given them a C+. I mean, they were Dejuan. Yeah, Dejuan, look, he was worn out toward the end of last year.
Yeah.
Man, he's that alpha dog on defense. He gives his all, and he doesn't back down from anybody. You know, that's what I like about the dude. Martavius Murphy, he showed flashes of, you know, when May Ween was very inconsistent in his senior year. That was unfortunate. But Antonio Gordon, he had his moments. Definitely, I can, when I mentioned him, he played very well in one of the games that is slipping away at the moment. I think it was Marquette, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the game I was looking at. Yeah, that I wanted to say. Yeah, he played very well there. I mean, he was very consistent. But, you know, these three guys, they're going to have one of these guys. And, again, we said it on a podcast last weekend. Like you said, Alex, we're probably going to say this multiple times on a Triple P. Somebody is going to have to step up. And you talk Mike McGurl, I have him on the list. We'll mention, talk about him in just a few moments. But yeah, you hope that Dejuan takes that next step.
Montavious stays on the floor healthy, and Antonio Gordon makes some adjustments to his game. These guys will go somewhere. So I give them a C+ in their freshman year, and we'll see what adjustments and what gains they can make during this time, because this team obviously is still going to be young with a lone senior McGurl.
Yeah, and Eddie, I didn't mean to try to cut you off there, but I wanted to be sure to get in that I don't think that C+ is harsh at all, because, well, I give them a B because I do see that ceiling for them. You know, I think you bring up a good point, and it's true. I mean, those guys, they came in with high expectations. I mean, I know that the recruiting class that's coming in this upcoming year is the best that Bruce has had, and that recruiting class has really high expectations. But prior to this recruiting class, the one that came in 19 and 20 was Bruce's best to date. And there were a lot of expectations coming in with it.
Oh.
And look, when you have expectations and you don't live fully up to those expectations, you're going to be held to a higher standard. So I totally understand the C+ grade, because, I mean, you mentioned it. Deshaun Gordon, he was expected to come in and be a legit stud for K-State, and he still ended up being that. But you're right, he did hit a wall, and he absolutely hit a wall, and he doesn't back down against anyone, and I love that too. And he's a bulldog out there on defense. But he's going to have to make adjustments. He's going to have to learn how to, you know, manage that energy. You know, you can't just exert all the energy at once and then just be dead tired second half of the year. He's going to have to learn how to manage that. He's going to have to learn how to get better. But I think C+ is fair. Maybe is it a little harsh? Maybe. But, I mean, I think people need to understand that these guys did have high expectations coming in, and when you have those types of expectations, you're going to be held to a higher standard. There's going to be a higher bar for you, and is that fair or unfair? That's a different discussion, but you are going to be held to a higher standard, and it's one thing expecting a recruiting class of a bunch of two-stars, you know, and what they're going to do compared to a recruiting class of 3 and 4 stars. So, Deshaun Gordon was Mr. Basketball in Chicago
his senior year
of high school. I mean, there should be some legitimate expectations coming in with Mr. Basketball in Chicago, one of the great basketball cities in the country. So, I think that you bring up good points. And, you know, maybe C+ is a little harsh, but I just think people should keep the expectation thing in the back of their mind, and when they're thinking about those grades.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, and one more note on Deshaun Gordon, and I probably said this last week, and I probably say it again right now. Yeah, there was a lot of hype surrounding Deshaun last year, and I thought, oh man, we're gonna get a player here, maybe the next Jacob Poland, maybe. But yeah, I mean, there's some positives and some negatives going through a freshman year, and we're K-State Nation. We all gotta hope that Deshaun Gordon takes that next level, be's a leader. He was actually, from all what Bruce Weber was talking about throughout the season, like, extra film room, getting extra practices. Like, he was calling, texting Bruce, like, after practice and whatnot. This guy seems to be a leader already, from my vantage, from where I'm sitting at. So,
Deshaun's head is screwed on straight. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because you're right. Bruce raved about him even when he was hitting that wall. He was committed. He was determined to get better and to continue playing and playing it hard and at the highest level that he could. And this offseason, he just worked his tail off. So he is committed, and his head screwed up straight, and he is about the team, and he is about getting better. And that is why I remain optimistic on what he can do and what he can accomplish, and why I also am kind of you know, bullish on him being a leader because he's got that right attitude for that. So, you know, the jury's still out. But, and, you know, getting to that KU, you know, brawl that happened, you know, we understand that, you know, DeJuan kind of made, maybe it was a boneheaded decision there, but Bruce touched on it, and I fully believe it. I mean, I believe DeJuan, you know, made the play that he did there late because he's just a competitor. And it was a dumb, stupid thing for him to do, but he's a freshman, he's young, he's a competitor, and he plays 100% for 40 minutes. And I think that's all he was doing, to be 100% honest, in that moment. So I think that was kind of a good snapshot of DeJuan. Playing hard all year long, made a boneheaded decision, but that's just kind of how he goes. That kind of gets back to that bulldog mentality that you talked about earlier.
Yeah, so be interested to see what happens here. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, couple of K-State alums, / Wildcat 91.9 alums as well. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Now, this recruiting class right here for this upcoming season, quote-unquote, is the highest-rated recruiting class under Coach Weber. It was 14th by Rivals.com, 22nd-ranked 247sports.com, and ranked 24th by ESPN. This class, and this doesn't recruit, this does not include a couple of transfers. Davion Bradford, Luke Kasuki, Nigel Pack, a lot of hype around Nigel Pack and Selton Miguel. And now, so another note that we all need to pay close attention to, these guys, well, Bradford, Kasuki, and Pack, each repeated All-State honors in each of their state's highest classification. They're in their senior seasons, while Selton Miguel was the 2020 regular season MVP for the Sunshine Independent Athletic Association. In addition, all four of these cats, see what I did there, scored more than 1,000 points throughout their high school careers.
It really is a great class, and you look at it, and you know, there's a lot of really every position is accounted for too. I know it sounds silly, but I mean, you've got your point guard, your shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center. Literally, all five are addressed in this class, which is a good thing to see. And obviously, you mentioned Nigel Pack. I mean, he's the one that's expected to the big name of the group. He's the four star. He's the one that on it is on Go Power Cat. He's got a 94 rating, and so he's expected to obviously be a big player. And then Selton Miguel has obviously probably been the second most hyped. He had a 90 grade 92, and K-State needs some shooting guard help. So I definitely think that you could see a lot from him. Him as well, and I always say his name wrong, Eddie, and help me on the pronunciation of his on Luke's last name. Is it Luke Kazuki? Kazuki?
Yeah, you're right there, Luke Kazuki. We're all going to have to learn how to say it.
I have to say, this honestly, there are some weird last names. They're not weird last names. They're just names that for some reason I struggle to say. I don't know why. But Luke Kazuki. It seems like he could be a real good sharpshooter, and we all know K-State is a sharpshooter. That's something that this team lacks.
Oh, they do. Yep.
They really don't have a sharpshooter at all, and they need it. It would loosen everything up on the offensive end, and I've heard good things about him being able to shoot the ball, and boy, K-State needs that desperately. So I'll be looking for him to do that. And then, you know, we talked about them needing help at help down low. They got a couple centers in that. You know, you mentioned Davion Bradford, Carlton Lingard, and then they got the transfer, the power forward coming from UTEP. And I know I'm going to butcher his name. I've seen it multiple times. I still don't know how to pronounce it either. Kausi Izigu? I'm sure that
I think it's Izigu.
Is it Izigu?
Yeah, I think it's Izigu. Yeah.
So okay, interesting. So people at home, it you do say it the way it reads. Okay. I figured it would be different. Okay, so KFC Izigu. So we'll see what you can do too, but I like that there's a lot of different positions in this. I'm really interested with Nigel Pack. I'm just interested to see what K-State does at point guard next year. I'm interested to see. I mean, how do they go about that? I mean, is that something? Do we expect to see maybe Dejuan start at point? Do we maybe expect Nigel to start at point? What are they going to do? Shooting guard? Is that something where they want to put McGurl in? Are they going to put Miguel in? Do they maybe bump Dejuan to the two? All of a sudden you're seeing a little depth in the backcourt, and I'm starting to wonder, what are they going to do down in this area? So because K-State's two biggest, the three biggest recruits from the last 2 years are guards, so. Mm-hmm. Maybe they go small. I don't know. Maybe they go small, and they have the three guard look. And I mean, they did that. What year was it? Bruce went real small. It might have been. I'm blanking on what year it was, but there was one year that Bruce had a good team, and he went real small. And so maybe they would go that route. That's personally not my favorite. I don't like going and playing small ball. I just don't feel like that's a very successful long-term strategy. But who knows? Maybe he does that. But it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, there's a lot of players that seem like they can offer a lot of different things. And we talked about it last week that, you're going to see some new faces. Well, there's eight on this list. So you're going to be seeing at least eight new faces going into next year. And it's going to be interesting. Just to give a nugget, we mentioned last year's class. Last year's class was ranked 54th in the country. You mentioned this one. And by the way, the 54 is based on 24/7 sports. But they were saying about 50th last year. This one's in the 20s. Mm-hmm. So those are two pretty good recruiting classes. It's going to be interesting to see if you can take those two and you can mesh them together and what you can do there. So the good news for K-State, there's a lot of guys here. It gives you a better chance of finding some guys that hit, because not every guy's going to hit. We know that not all these guys are going to live up to their expectations, but when you have a class that's this large, you got a better chance. It's kind of like the NFL draft. Teams accumulate draft picks, because then there's a higher likelihood of one hitting and then getting that big star. That big stud draft pick. I kind of view it the same way with this. While you're losing a bunch of guys, you've got a big class with a lot of talented freshmen, and hey, you got a legit chance of getting some real nice players here. So if K-State can get three players from this group of eight that turn out to be really, really good basketball players, and then you can maybe get two from last year's class to become real nice players, then you got five. I mean, that's the starting five right there, possibly. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I like it. I like it. They're going to make, I said this last week, they're going to be freshmen. They're going to play like freshmen, Eddie. They're, once again, these are not the five-star blue-chip recruits that are coming out that look like NBA players coming into college. No, these are guys that are gonna have to go through the college ringer. But I'm optimistic about what they can do and what they can provide. And hopefully, K-State can get some more shooting, because they really need some more shooting. So I'm excited about the group.
Yeah, really anticipation for this group. And we all know Bruce Weber prides himself on defense. And I'm going to be interested to see what I can. We can talk about this all day, but we don't have that much time. But Nigel Pack, obviously, David Sloan transferring out is the reason probably why, because he was this good. 100 nationally, number 19 point guard in the country, fourth in the state of Indiana, 100 in Rivals.com, that was 247sports.com, Rivals.com, 124th nationally, number 28th point guard, and then you go to ESPN, has him 84th, you probably said that already, but 84th in ESPN 100, which is pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah.
21st point guard, and he was the second, number two point guard in the state of Indiana. And Bruce Weber, again, he prides himself on the defense end, because if you don't play defense, you're not going to see the court. You're not going to see it. And Miguel, he plays defense. That's from what I've heard, from what people have told me. Kasupi, I butchered it. Luke Kasupi is a sharpshooter, which they definitely need. And Davion Bradford, they need the body down low, obviously. Luke Kasupi, I said it again. Dang it. But anyways, you know what I'm saying. Dean Wade, and he's balling out in the NBA G League, and we wish now that he could have stayed healthy at K-State. That would have been a whole nother, that's a whole nother conversation, but
you know,
Nigel Pack, obviously, well-hyped, in my opinion, coming out of this group of this recruiting class, coming into this quote-unquote upcoming season, so I'm going to be interested to see what happens here. I want to touch on these two guys here real fast. And you brought up his name early in the podcast this afternoon. Mike McGurl. Obviously, the lone senior on this team. He started quite a bit last year. And obviously, in my opinion, I mean, as badly as they need that upperclassman leadership, I think he's... I might be in the minority of this, but I think he's better coming off the bench. I mean, he gives that spark. You know he's going to give you that effort defensively, and he can come up with huge shots like he did against TCU in the Big 12 title. He's made clutch three-point baskets throughout his career. You know he's going to give you that effort off the bench. That's in my opinion anyway. So, Mike McGurl, I don't know what your thoughts on this, Alex, but to me, you know, he with this young group coming in, and obviously this entire roster, and for the exception of Ezeagu and Rudy Williams, the transfers, Mike McGurl, he's been through the ringer, and he can tell these guys, hey, look, you know, Bruce Weber wants it this way. He wants the defender how to defend like this, or whatever the situation is, that, hey, you know, he can coach these guys up and say, hey, look, you know, we can go this, we can move in this direction and not go this direction. So how important is Mike McGurl going to be? He's going to be, to me, he's going to be critical this upcoming year for this basketball team, I think.
Yeah, I think critical is an understatement, because we've talked about this every episode. We haven't brought it up yet, and I'll bring it up now, then, because it hasn't been brought up yet.
Okay.
Coronavirus. It is out there. And there is unknowns in regards to the season and what's going to happen. And players can't get together and practice and work out and do those things like they may be able to in other off seasons. And there's some unknowns coming into this season. So who knows how much time this group will get together. And things might be a little wonky because of the coronavirus. And we just don't know how it'll look once basketball revs around, but by all indications, I don't think it'll look any better. So, whatever happens, those freshmen are going to need someone who they can follow. Those freshmen and sophomore. Someone who can say, follow me, I'll get us through this with my experience. And Mike McGurl is the lone guy left to do that. So, he is going to play an integral role, even more than if it was a regular season, because of the coronavirus. And I think a lot of players are going to be looking to someone to tell them what to do, and someone who can lead by example And I think that he can do those things. So he's going to play an integral role. He would play an integral role even if there wasn't the coronavirus, because you have such a young team. You need a guy who can really work with the young guys and help them get better and teach them the, you know, the tricks of the trade of playing with the Big 12. And those are things that Mike McGurl can do. So his role is going to be integral. It's obviously going to be beyond what he does on the court. What he does off the court is going to be just as important, if not more important, than what he does on the court from a statistics standpoint. What he shoots, what his three-point percentage is, or how many points per game he averages. I don't think I care as much about that as I do about how he helps develop guys like Nigel Pack, guys like Sal Miguel, guys like Dejuan Gordon. I think that guys like Luke Kazuki, I don't even know what that is. Guys like Luke, I'm just going to call him Luke. Guys like Luke. I think that that's more important, because we touched on this a little bit in the past. I don't think the expectations are terribly high for this K-State team coming in.
No.
And so, you know, it's not... I think that just makes it that much more important for Mike McGurl to do that. So then you get to your next question that you brought up. So who do you start? And I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. You know, hey, let's start the young guys. You know, let them see the minutes. Have Mike McGurl come off the bench, because I agree with you. That is his best role. I think that he's at his best when he's the sixth man coming off, the seventh guy, whatever it might be. I think that's where he thrives. And, you know, let's let the young guys get the time. You know, it'll help them adjust. It'll make them better long term and that type of thing. With that said, I don't think that's the direction that Bruce and the coaching staff will go. I think that they're going to want the veteran experience in the starting lineup. And look, that's something that may make them better this particular season. But who knows what that does when it comes to development, because I think that you want these guys to see the court.
Yeah.
And if my girl's playing a lot and he is preventing a guy like Luke from seeing the court, or a guy like Selton Miguel, I don't know if that's the best move. So, you know, I think that we need to see kind of how the season goes. I definitely think to start the year, Mike McGurl will be in that starting lineup because of the veteran presence that he has. And I get it. That makes sense. You know, it'll keep the guys calm and composed while on the court. And I get it from that standpoint. But once you see the season starting to slip, I think that you got to let the young guys play. So I'm for Mike McGurl starting to begin the year. But like I said, if you see that season start to slip and you see your NCAA tournament hopes starting to go down the drain, you know, let those young guys play a lot. Let Mike come off the bench. Let him kind of serve as a coach and do that. Do that type of a role. Not like Mike doesn't play, but I think that you want to think a little more big picture at that point, if that makes sense. So, you know, that's interesting. I don't want to be Bruce Weber trying to make those decisions. I already don't know who between the guards, what sets you want to go. I mean, how do you decide who you want to run your point? I don't know. You're right. That's why David Sloan transferred out. There's clearly not going to be any time for him at the point. And I mean, that's, you know, clear with Dejuan and Nigel. So, but who do you start? Do you start Dejuan? Do you start Nigel? I don't know. I mean, how do you get them the time? You know, Selton, if you're starting Mike, you know, is Selton your two? Well, if he's your two, then when's Luke getting time? So, you know, that's the thing when you got so many new guys, and usually you'd be like, well, you know, in the off season when the guys are working together, they'll figure a lot of that out. But we just don't know how much work they'll get together. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, Eddie. I really don't. But I do think that we will see Mike McGurl in the starting lineup. I really do think that we'll see that. And And with Mike McGurl from a basketball standpoint, what I do want to see from him is I want to see him be a little more consistent. I know we keep talking about this consistency thing with the basketball team, but the fact of the matter is they were inconsistent, you know, as a whole, and that included Mike McGurl. There were games where he would shoot lights out, and there were games where he'd shoot threes just at the backboard. And it's like, okay, you got to be a little more consistent there, you know. That was fine at the beginning, but, you know, you gotta make shots. And when Mike McGurl gets hot, he's hot, and he doesn't miss. But when he's off, it is ugly. So he has got to, you know, get a little more consistency. I think that'd make K-State a lot better. I really do. I think that would make them a lot better and would help them as a team. But he's gonna play an integral role with this group and with the guards. And we haven't even talked about another point guard that they have coming in with Rudell Williams. So, I mean, there's depth there. It's gonna be interesting to see. And it's gonna be interesting to see how many minutes Mike McGurl takes and how many minutes he might be taking from them and how many minutes they may be taking from Mike. So stay tuned, K-State, because there's a lot of unanswered questions there.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, definitely stay tuned indeed. A lot of questions, and we're not going to get those answered for a few more months. So, yeah, you brought up COVID-19. Yeah, that's all said right there. So, we'll see. As I know we're only into June, but we'll see what happens there. Just got a few more minutes on the podcast here this afternoon here. I want to get this in. I have two more points here. The first one, we haven't said this guy's name yet. Alex, we're 5 episodes in this podcast, and we have not said this guy yet. And he is coming back to K-State as an assistant coach. I did not know about this guy. Assistant coach at Robert Morris. If COVID-19 did not invade the United States, Robert Morris would have been an NCAA team, and that is Shane Southwell. We have not said his name yet. He's coming back as an assistant coach for Bruce Weber, and he's the other guy that I want to touch on here before we close this podcast out. That former player, and he played during my time was at K-State. And
oh, yeah.
This guy was also, speaking of inconsistent, he was very inconsistent himself as well, and he got kicked out of practice. I listened to I thought this guy would be one of those transferred, but the dude, Shane Southwell, stayed the course as a player, and he became one of the better shooters on the team.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. What a chance. 180. Yeah, so one of the top scorers, and I believe Bill Self said that he was one of the most improved players in the Big 12. That says something coming from a team, a coach that has ruled this conference for a very long time. Of course, we have two of those conference championships. So, Shane Southwell coming back to K-State, coming off of a great team from Robert Morris last season. Now you're coming back here, and now this is going to be a whole another 180 for him. Now you have one senior on that team, a couple transfers, and this young crop of talent that you have in your hands. How is Shane Southwell, Alex, going to be a big impact for this young team coming into this season in the fall? How big is that? How important is that?
Hey, I'm so glad that you brought this up, because I think that this is actually something that's not being talked about and is going to play a huge, not just a big, a huge role in this team, is the fact that, you know, yeah, you got a young team, but you've got Shane Southwell as your assistant coach, and he's not that far removed from playing. You mentioned it. He played in our time. He graduated, I believe it would have been 2014. I want to say he graduated 1 year before me. I want to say it was 2014. I want to say his senior year was the year that... yes, that is correct. Because his senior year was Marcus Foster and Wes Iwundu's freshman year.
Yep, and that had to be right. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Now, the year that K-State made that really nice run with that group of freshmen. So, so that was his senior year. And when his junior year rolled around... And he got into Bruce Weber's system. He seemed to really flourish, honestly, in Bruce's offense. And so it really worked wonders for him. It seemed like Frank's offense didn't work so well. And if Frank stayed, he probably would have transferred out. But Bruce coming instead of stay, and it ended up working out well. But having Shane Southwell back is great because he's not that far removed from playing. And look, he can lace it up, and he can play with those guys. And he can show them, and he can almost serve in that like veteran player role, if that makes sense. Because he still can ball. He's not far removed from playing in college. He's played in Bruce's system, and so you know he's almost going to be an extension of Mike McGurl in a way. That's going to be a huge for them. And then you flip it to look at J.L., Jordan Henriquez. He's a graduate assistant.
Yep, that's right.
The same type of deal. You got a bunch of young big men, and they're going to need someone to lead them. J.O., same type of deal. He graduated 1 year before Shane Southwell in 2013. He played in Bruce's system. He's not that far removed from playing. And he can play that same type of role. He can lace it up, and he can ball with those big men. And show them the way and do that. So K-State's really kind of got it touched for the guard position and the forward position with two of their assistants. And that's huge. I just think that is absolutely enormous. So when Shane came aboard, I love the move. You know, it always stinks when you lose a coach, especially because I like this K-State staff. I think that they got a real nice basketball staff. But
Yeah.
But remember when we talked about football when having Klanderman come in as to replace Scotty Hazleton, hate to lose Scotty, but Klanderman, oh man, he's going to be perfect, just a perfect seamless transition.
Yep.
For them, and they'll just keep rolling. I think it's the same type of deal with Shane Southwell. If anything, I think they may be better for it because he can help. I think he can help even more with the development of those guards. And that's just so important. And you're right, Robert Morris. Look what he did there. Look what he did there. The guy can coach. I would have never thought it when he first came that he'd be a coach.
No.
He is.
Heck no.
And he can coach. And so I'm thrilled to have him on the staff. I got fond memories of watching him play. And you're right, he wasn't always the most mature player out there at the beginning, but I'll tell you what, he had swagger when he was on the court, and he didn't lack confidence, and he learned to shoot. He didn't just come in with the gift to shoot the basketball. He learned, and he worked to get that shot where it eventually ended up at. And I think that just makes him even more equipped to help these guys develop their shot. And we all know how bad K-State needs shooters. So, really excited for him. I think he and J.O. are going to just be huge. Huge for K-State. And come on, man. Who doesn't love looking over that K-State bench and seeing Shane Southwell and Jordan Henriquez, two guys who we have fond memories of. And they're winners. I think that's the final thing is they're winners. So, you bring in guys who have won. That's big because, you know, that's just guys who have won. I kind of think back to use a baseball reference, the Kansas City Royals back when they made their run and won the World Series in 2015. They sucked for so many years, and then they had a group of players that they wanted A-ball together, and they wanted Double-A together, and then they wanted Triple-A together, And then they got to the majors, and then they won at the majors together. And so when you get guys who are winners together, you know, winning breeds success. And I think that's what you got. You got a bunch of guys who are coming in here as freshmen, and they all won. A majority of them won at their high schools. They didn't play on crappy teams. I mean, most of these guys played on teams that won a lot of basketball games. And then you got some assistants who won a lot of basketball games in college. And so hopefully that winning just breeds success. And that's what you hope for. And everybody can say what they want about Bruce. He's won two Big 12 titles at K-State. No other, you know, Greg Mark can't say that. So, I mean, he's had some bad seasons, but he's also proven that he's going to be a winner too. So.
Ouch. Ouch.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, man. Frank Martin did not win a Big 12 championship. And Bruce Weber, for all the hell, ups and downs that he's endured during his long tenure here in Manhattan, has brought the school two Big 12 titles in a deep NCAA run, Elite Eight.
It's so bizarre because I've never known a coach to be on the hot seat that's won two conference titles and made an Elite Eight run in that time frame with a winning record who has their name called for him. It's just because he has a couple years on his resume with K-State that you're just like, what the hell? What was that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I want to put a pin on Shane Southwell here, and then I'm going to wrap up with a quick shout-out to the K-State women's basketball team here. So, all right, so Southwell, as a player, finished his career, 92 wins. Like you said, he's a winner, which tied him with his teammate, Will Spradling, ninth all-time in K-State school history. 2013 honorable mention, all-Big 12 selection. He started 26 of 33 games for, of course, the Big 12 champions during that year. I believe it was 12-13.
Yep.
Yeah. He averaged 8 points a game, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal as a junior. So that's some notes right there for Shane Southwell. You can probably add on to his, you can go ahead and add it on to his resume. Robert Morris, assistant coach, did a fine job. And prior to leaving for Robert Morris, he was, I believe, a graduate assistant for K-State. I believe you already mentioned that, Alex.
Yeah, I do remember.
So he's making the right steps to possibly be a head coach someday down the road. I don't know where, but he's making
it. My God, is K-State's next head coach, Eddie? Is he? I don't know
right now. Ask me that if Bruce Weber and this current team struggles. They're in a struggle. They're still young, but we'll see. I mean, ask me that after this upcoming year.
Okay, I'll be sure to ask it again.
Yeah, so Shane Southwell doing big things, coming back to Manhattan. And another tandem that's doing big things to close out a tremendous episode of the Purple Project podcast, giving you freshly K-State content, good K-State content. I wanted to give a shout out to former K-State basketball athlete, a two-way athlete, Peyton Williams and Chrissy Carr, for what they did or what they're continuing to do with the movement, with the black movement, for what they did. It was on the news this past week, and Chrissy has made her stance known on Twitter. If you stand with me, or you're not, you can go somewhere else. So, I mean, you can add your words here, Alex, on this, but Peyton Williams, two-way star here at K-State, volleyball, and a fine basketball player. She is one of my favorites at K-State, no doubt. Her attitude, her class, her play on the court and off the court, one of the most, I think, a lot of young ladies can look up to. I want to be that girl. I want to be that lady to represent the university in that way. And Chrissy Carr, we know she had her ups and downs this past year, but she can shoot the three from right here from Manhattan High, recruited from K-State, Jeff Mitty, and oh yeah, she can speak. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not going to add on to what she said. That just for what those two did in the march together in Topeka to find themselves in Topeka during that march, during the peaceful march. Was it 2 weeks ago now? That was a lovely scene right there. And I wanted to give them a shout out, of course, on the Purple Project podcast. That was well done.
Yeah, and first off, K-State fan, Christiana Carr, I mean, you know, remember that name, because there's a couple more years of her playing under Jeff Mitty, and she's going to do some big things, and what she did, obviously great, and look, what you said with Peyton Williams, I think he hit it right on the head, Eddie. Every girl should aspire to be like her. I mean, that may be a poor choice of words, but she really sets an example that I would assume a lot of young girls would aspire to. The with the way she acts on the court, off the court, she worked her tail off, K-State, to become what she was with volleyball, basketball. I mean, heck, you mentioned her time in basketball. She averaged 15 points a game, over 15 points a game her senior year. And to do that and to do what she did on the volleyball court and the person she was off the court, the person she is off the court, she's a tremendous person. She really epitomizes what the K-State family is about. And then for her to go and to stand and support of the Black Lives Matter movement, and to be there with her ex-teammate, Christiana Carr, just a special moment. Really just a special moment. It really just epitomized her. She's got a huge heart, and she works so hard. And I'll take it for it. I don't think that she even... Yeah, she sets an example for girls around the country. She sets an example for everyone on what you should be. She's just got a great heart. She works really hard, and I mean that really is where everyone should strive to be. Everybody should try to work as hard as she can, try to be as good of a person as she can, and get involved in the community the way that she does. You know how much she gets involved in the community, being out there, and really epitomizes what K-State stands for, the K-State family, and what Jeff Mitty stands for. In the basketball program, a lot of great ladies on that team, and there always have been a lot of great ladies on that team. I remember interviewing Haley Zahada. I don't know if you remember Haley Zahada, but I remember interviewing her on Wildcat World of Sports.
I do. Yes, I do. Yeah, I called a couple of games. Yep, called a couple games.
Yeah, exactly. We did. You and I we called a couple of games.
Yep.
Haley Zahada, great basketball player, even better person. Just a beautiful person. And so, you know, and Katia Lang, she and I graduated together, same major. She was a great person. I've spent a lot of time with her in the classroom, and she's an even better person than she was a player. And she was a good player. So, Jeff Mitty's, he's got a lot of girls that have just, you know, great integrity on that team. Work really hard. Sure, just tip of cap to him. He's done a real nice job with the women's basketball program. But I think Peyton Williams really, you know, is someone that has really, you know, set the bar for what K-State is and what K-State's about, and getting involved in the Black Lives Matter movement is nothing that surprised me, because she's just. Like I said, you know, she's gonna do what she thinks is right, because she's got a big heart, and look, when she does something, she does it 100%, and you gotta respect that. So, shout out to her in order, and can't wait to see what Christiana Carr has in store for the next women's basketball season. Because hey, just saying, if you take a little peek at that roster, I think they're going to have a pretty good team next year, Eddie. I think they're going to have a pretty good team. So, but tip of the cap to them.
Yeah, and that's a little teaser for next week. We'll talk about them next week along with getting back to the gridiron with football, with student athletes coming back on Monday. So this podcast will be out on Tuesday. So they're going to do the whole COVID-19 testing and all that. They're going to test every day. So things are starting to warm up here a little bit. So excited to get back to gridiron. And we're going to talk some women's basketball next week.
I want to poke into this real quick. I did see that no K-State athletes that were tested positive for COVID. So that was great news to see, because yep, ample universities have had their student athletes test positive. I think Alabama had 5 football players test positive. K-State, they were in the all clear. So, hallelujah.
Yep.
Hopefully it stays that way.
Yep. Yeah, you hope it stays. You pray every day that these athletes can stay healthy and be able to work out with their teammates. I know it's going to be a little different format. We'll dive into all that this summer as we continue to get this podcast off the ground. But definitely, things are starting to kind of warm up, if you will. So definitely, that was great to hear about all the K-State athletes not being tested positive for the virus. So that's awesome to hear, and hopefully it'll stay that way, because these guys, especially football, Chris Klieman, they're anxious to get back on the football field and get this thing rolling. So, yeah.
Eddie, we haven't even talked about what can happen if there is an outbreak on one of the athletic programs either, and what if you have to forfeit games because you have too many players out and things like that. So, everybody, just keep that little nugget in mind. That is another reason why it's incredibly important that no one is positive right now, because someone's going to get bit in the butt and they're going to have a handful of positive tests, and I don't know what happens in that scenario. So stay tuned, I guess.
Yep, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you listen to your Wildcat fan here in Manhattan or San Diego, or listen to all over the United States, stay tuned to the Purple Project Podcast, the newest K-State podcast, for your latest coverage of K-State athletics and what's going on here in Manhattan. Alex, woo! This has been a great, good episode, folks. So,
hey, this is a hot episode. This was a hot, hot episode.
Yeah. Yep. Where can everybody find you on Twitter or social media?
If you want to find a social media, a Twitter handle that's about as hot as this episode, you can follow me on Twitter at AFACHTEN. That's the personal Twitter. You can also follow me on the professional Twitter. It's probably a little more lukewarm than hot, but it's at Alex_ITRC. That's professional Twitter. It'll get a little more insights on some of the work that I'm doing. Where can they find you, Eddie?
Yep. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Eddie_EG3. Again, at Eddie_EG3 on Twitter as well. And also, I got a NASCAR podcast that's been established for a couple years. Gotta throw this in here. The 3-Wide podcast with EG3. You can find that every week as well. So I do that as well here in Manhattan, Kansas. As well, but yeah, Alex, man, great episode, and we will talk again next week. We'll talk more women's basketball, and we'll see what we come up with on the gridiron here as summer is hot in Manhattan, and the action, I think, just getting started.
Oh, it's definitely just getting started, and I look forward to kind of, as things get closer, for these conversations to get even more real, and oh my gosh, hopefully we can be talking about sports actually being played pretty soon, and not sitting here saying, well, I wonder what happens with this, well, I wonder what happens with that. Hopefully we don't have to wonder that much longer. Hopefully we can get sports going, and we can see it. We can see football being played, and we can see basketball gearing up to get played.
All right, yeah, that's right. Hey, Purple Project Podcast, we're out. Thanks for listening. And you catch us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify for right now. Alex Aiden, we'll talk again next week. Eddie Greer III saying thank you for listening. to the Purple Project Podcast. And we will talk to you again next week. And remember, here come them cats. We're out.
Edition of the Purple Project Podcast.